What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Five Rounds today. We are here in downtown Toronto. I am John Ramdean alongside my pal, Robin Black. Coming up later in the show, we're going to be joined by Josh Gross, one of the best journalists in all of mixed martial arts. He has a new book out talking about Muhammad Ali and his match with Antonio Inoki, a fight that very few people saw, maybe considered one of the first mixed martial arts bouts. And of course, we've got to acknowledge the passing of Muhammad Ali on Friday, after dealing with Parkinson's for the past number of decades. So clearly a huge loss in the world of combat sports, just as a person in general. But I've got to talk about UFC 199. What a night it was at the Forum in Los Angeles, California. The main event, the middleweight championship of the world on the line. Luke Rockhold, a physical specimen, training out of the American Kickboxing Academy in San Jose, California, with Daniel Cormier, the current light heavyweight champion, as well as Cain Velasquez, the former UFC heavyweight champion. They faced off with each other before. Luke Rockhold got the stoppage victory. So it was supposed to go the same way, considering Luke Rockhold was getting ready for an even better Chris Weidman. Michael Bisping had other plans, landed the left hand that sent Luke Rockhold reeling to the canvas. And then Michael Bisping followed it up. The referee stepped in, and Michael Bisping becomes the new middleweight champion of the world. Really, this is, in my opinion, what it is all about. This is why we tune into mixed martial arts, because even though you think you know, even though you're confident, most of our picks, I think, again, if you're objective and you look at the way things are laid out, this was not a good situation for Michael Bisping. Luke Rockhold had a tremendous camp, just didn't look confident. But these are the things that happen in MMA. That's what makes it spectacular.
Yeah, and it is fun chatting with people about it. We learn things from people's different perspectives and our own and the information we gather. And I spent a long time. I was not going to go, Mike's going to win. But I spent a lot of time over the weeks chatting with friends and, you know, on Facebook or whatever, and trying to convince people that he had a shot. Because you're saying, was Rockhold the favorite? The answer is yes. But people were saying, Mike has zero chance. There's no, I would say, listen, he's got a chance. People are like, Wolf tickets.
Yeah.
You're selling Wolf tickets. I'm like, and the main reason that people had for completely writing Bisping off was, well, look at what happened in their first fight. Look at what happened.
Which is valid.
It is. But it's one piece of valid information in a vast array, in a buffet of information.
Yeah.
And that mattered. But what mattered more was the mindsets that they were in, where Luke was at in the moment. Luke wasn't performing well in the moment, and he had a guy who was performing at his very best in the moment.
Yeah, and that, I think, though, when people look at going into the fight, that Luke Rockhold in his prime, the champion, he took the title from arguably the best guy in the division in Chris Weidman. His training camp, getting ready for the rematch. Michael Bisping has that damaged eye, was drinking and partying in Toronto for the previous 6 weeks, takes this fight on short notice. So the deck was stacked against Michael Bisping. Add to that, they have already faced off with each other. You can understand why it's like, okay, if this is the scenario, Luke Rockhold beats Michael Bisping 10 out of 10 times, 9 out of 10 times, based on all of that information. Yeah. That seems reasonable.
Yeah. Dan Hardy is one of the very best analysts in the game. He turned from fighter to brilliant commentator and a good dude. And I had him on in the breakdown. We were chatting. And he said, Michael Bisping wins this fight 2 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And Dan knows what he is talking about. This Michael Bisping against this Luke Rockhold in the state that they were in, and their freedom, ability to actually perform. And sometimes we talk about that and just sort of throw it away. But what does that really mean? I mean, if you think of yourself, those days where you're, whatever it is you do, you play a little road hockey, you play table tennis, you make presentations at work.
In the zone.
Sometimes you're in the zone. And other times it's just not going. It's just not working. That's what Rockhold, we did have. And sometimes that's a credit to Bisping. He creates that in the opponent. But these two, Bisping wins that fight 8 times out of 10. Rockhold at his best, and Bisping feeling the effects of overtraining and any number of other things, maybe Rockhold wins that 8 times. So many variables. It's something we talk about nonstop. People look to categorize and simplify and identify, oh, that's this kind of punch, that's this kind of thing. He has 8 out of 10 in this defense. And it isn't like that. It's not like that at all. The more we learn about fighting, all it should do to you is open infinitely more questions. It's like any science. And then it's art on top of that. So there's even more variables. So fighting, it's supposed to get more complicated to understand the more you know about it.
I think one of the reasons that this idea of Bisping winning this fight the way that he did is so intriguing to me is that you rewind for a few months ago, Nathan Diaz takes this fight on short notice against a physical specimen, a guy very mobile, a different riddle, and Nate Diaz gets the stoppage victory after taking the fight on 2 weeks' mm-hmm. notice as well. Now, the question I want to ask is, if you know how to fight, if you've spent time in the fire, fighting at the highest level, facing all the different body types that both Nathan Diaz mm-hmm. and Michael Bisping have faced throughout their career, they get to this point, they train for 2 weeks, they win. Do they reassess? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, wait a second. Maybe I don't need to go through 10-week training camps.
Well, we should all reassess. We should all take every piece of data that you can find and run it through your algorithms and compare it to different things.
But they went through it. If you've never gone through that before, it's like, well, I've never taken a fight on 2 weeks' notice. I can't really picture what that's like. These guys are like, oh, okay, I know what I did during those 2 weeks. I'm just going to do that moving forward.
I don't think they would do that. Of course. But I think what you would take from that, first thing you got to ask, did they win despite being on 2 weeks' notice or on some level because of it? That's really hard to tell. Right. There's really no science in being able to decide that. And then it's a small sample size. It's two guys. If it was 2,000 guys, you'd be like, man, this two-week thing works. But what we should take from that is not, is it better to have less? Is it worse that we're doing too much? And I think that is what people, those two guys, will possibly take from it. And many others who are looking at the situation are like, how overtrained are we? How overthinking are we? How much are we way overstressing? My worst performances, and I had a few terrible ones. My wife says it all the time, when we'll talk about it. It's hard. Talking about failure is a very difficult thing. Failure is valid and valuable for you. You have to learn from it. But looking back, I'm comfortable talking with her about it now, and she's like, your biggest thing is you made too much out of it. You made way too much of it. And she's right. And I think a lot of fighters do. I think even the greats sometimes do. Definitely George at times did. You saw him overtraining to injury, stressed out like crazy week before, mm-hmm. freaking out about media and all that kind of stuff. I think we talked about it on the Big Five Round show. Demetrius Johnson trains way less than almost everybody else. Mm-hmm. It's trained smarter. So I think that'll be the takeaway, if there is one, for Diaz. That'll be the takeaway for Bisping, is let's not make such a big thing out of it that you feel the weight of it. Let's just treat it for what it is. You're a fighter. You know martial arts. You're going to fight a guy.
Before we take a break, over the weekend you were at Open Mat with Jorge Blanco. He did a seminar. This is a guy that worked with Michael Bisping. Mm-hmm. He's in that infamous video holding pads mm-hmm. for George St. Pierre. People talking about George's return. He's one of the he's kind of a go-to training partner for the guys down at the Black Stallions. I know that Rashad Evans spent time working with him. What was his take on this whole Michael Bisping scenario?
Well, first of all, Jorge Blanco is a brilliant coach, a brilliant sharer of knowledge, and even when he's talking about fundamentals and simplicity, he puts it in such a way that I've had
smart
fights.
Dude.
I've trained a lot. There were people that barely trained at all, and we both were able to get something. Very smart dude, and I really want to work with him more. You see, he works with GSP and all these guys that you mentioned. They love him. Bisping loves him, and they only got to know each other for the few weeks that he was here. He said he might be surprised if Mike won, but he would be incredibly excited. He also said, that, I put him on the spot, he said, gun to his head, he thinks George would come back.
Really? Wow.
And I did literally put a gun to his head. I was like, my bosses will fire me if I don't ask you this. And he didn't want to say it, but I pushed him into it. He said, in his opinion, he would expect George would come back.
And based on his skills, he was holding the pads. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about UFC 199 because it was a hell of a night of fights. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you. UFC 199 went down Saturday at the Forum in Inglewood, California. Of course, Michael Bisping stunning the world and making hardcore MMA fans very, very happy because this is what it's all about. You know, we have our preview shows where we're asked to give predictions. And we give them, reluctantly give predictions.
I predicted Bisbee.
Yeah, yeah. you did predict
Bisbee. I did, but I also said, don't bet any money on it. I'm a fan.
It's true.
But we did spend a lot of time saying he can win.
Exactly.
Don't be crazy.
And that's one of the reasons why we don't like doing predictions is because there's a number of factors. We're not there to go through the training camp of Luke Rockhold. We don't know how well it went. We don't know. We're not inside Michael Bisping's head. We're not around them enough to try to make an accurate assessment.
I don't want to be in Michael Bisping's head.
Right now?
Right now.
That'd be awesome.
Who knows what he's doing right now? That guy's
I'm the greatest of all time. Yeah. Just the fact that he's an entertainer and everything he's done for the sport. You know, he helped, you know, create interest in the UK and in Europe because of his stint on The Ultimate Fighter. So people started to pay attention. And that, I think, opened the doors for so many other fighters.
British. The whole world over there.
Exactly. And then from there, to see his body of work and to get that win over Anderson Silva.
Wasn't that tying him for most wins with
GSP,
with George?
With George. I mean, like, he's in like, it's a very good thing, and not everybody gets the luxury of kind of realizing their dream because it's so limited.
Not everybody. Almost nobody.
Yeah. I mean, there's some because when things are new and it's open up, some people can do things. Yeah. It's like, okay, you have an opportunity here. Let's do this. And some people can win a championship. Like, I think if you look through history, it's like, wow, that guy won a title. Like Dave Monet. I'm not saying anything about Dave Monet, but Dave Monet was the UFC middleweight champion of the world, right?
Awesome. Yeah.
So this guy is now in the same, you know, Luke Rockhold, Anderson Silva,
Michael Bisping,
Dave Monet.
Yeah.
So
great,
there's
great martial artist.
Great martial artist. I'm not taking anything
away. But it was an easier era.
It was a different era. So when you look at this and you know that the damage that Michael Bisping has done to his body for the sport of mixed martial arts, this is very, very deserving of Michael Bisping. Bisping, you're the man. The co-featured bout, Dominic Cruz, you're the man, too. One of the most really one-sided performances. Now, not as if he, like, was, he didn't smoke Uriah Faber,
but
he pretty much smoked him without really beating the living daylights out of this guy.
But I'll tell you that of all, other than Mizugaki, Uriah Faber is like, damn, this guy actually did bust me up a bit.
Yeah.
And that's,
but that's the reality of a fight. Yeah. It's like, you expect this. It's not as if Uriah Faber has never suffered that before. Tyson Griffin fights, the Mike Thomas Brown fights, Jose Aldo chopped him down. Yeah. Frankie Edgar did his thing to him.
Uriah is tougher than all of us.
Exactly.
Every one of us.
Everybody
watching this. He's tougher than all of us.
What's hilarious is the pre-fight stuff going into this. There's him and Michael Bisping there. And Bisping is standing in the arena, I guess it was the venue, the forum. And he's standing on a ledge of the seat. And he's like, oh, I'm standing here and I make you look even shorter. And Faber's like, I didn't even notice. Because he has to look up at everybody.
Yeah, right.
So I look up at everybody and I'm not afraid of a single one of you guys. Because that's what Uriah Faber's made of. Yeah. The Team Alpha Male is so fitting because this guy could be 2'8" and still believe that he's King Kong.
Mm-hmm. You learn a lot about what it is to be a fan by being a fan.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of my favorite fighters of all time. Uriah Faber. It's just everything about him, the way that he built his whole game, the way that the unstoppability as far as if you were to shut him off or put him to sleep, okay? But otherwise, he's just going to keep going. That tenacity in life. You're supposed to learn things from fighting. You watch Uriah Faber, you learn how to go after it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is undeniable what Dominic Cruz is as an elite
Martial artist.
We've never seen anything like this. I keep saying this, but 5 years ago, that guy stopped physically being able to keep growing. And people had 5 years to catch up, and he's still 5 years ahead of them.
I think they didn't realize, though. They just thought, oh, it's just this weird movement. Travis Brown seemed to still, okay, I'm going to try to incorporate that into my game. And then we don't really see that from Travis Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, TJ Dillashaw, kind of in a different, in that Dwayne Ludwig, Ludwig way. But why aren't people? I mean, Demetrius Johnson, kind of. He's got his own version of what Dominic Cruz is doing. Why don't you think that people are on board? How come the coaches and the trainers aren't saying, okay, this is the enigma. Mm-hmm. This is something that we need to incorporate to make it difficult for everybody else.
Well, if Conor is going to avenge that loss and no guarantees, he's fighting a guy who's better than he's ever been, and he's still getting better, and he's incredibly confident. But if he's going to, it'll be with movement. It'll be being not in a straight line with this guy, making him have to keep stepping to get to you. Dominic just did that. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson did that to everyone, including Johnny Hendricks, and he's going to try to do that to Rory a little harder there. Yeah. Holly did that to Ronda, drew her into the space, made her chase. This is how you win now. You can beat all of these other fighters if you can master this. You can master range management. You can be in a place to hit them and make them chase you.
What happens when everybody else does it?
Then you can't. Then now that becomes a fight. If you could wrestle and I couldn't, you won with wrestling. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't wrestle. Oh, my God, you're wrestling me. I'm done. I had to learn first how to wrestle and then how to avoid your wrestling. And this avoids your wrestling. If you can't catch me and I can hit you and make you keep chasing me, and as you chase me, keep hitting you, I'll win every single fight. Just like Dominic Cruz is, just like Stephen Thompson has been to now. The Rory fight with Stephen Thompson is so important, because if Rory is going to beat him, we're going to see the first real signs of how to win a fight like this, especially if it can go 20 minutes. We'll see real answers. Nate Diaz beat Connor, who has some of this footwork, but Connor didn't use it. Connor failed in his own expression, and Diaz, you know, clouded him and was brilliant in doing so and deserves all the credit. Wonderboy, we haven't seen him fail at that. We haven't seen Demetrius Johnson fail at that. Mm-hmm. We saw Holly Holm fail at that. And what that did was the only answer Miesha Tate has was that Uriah Faber answer, which is still why he was in it. Just stay with it.
Go after
just stay
it.
With going. It. If I can just stay in it, if I can just get a hold of her, I'll get her. And she did. But that's not a winning formula. Just stay in it no matter if you're losing in hopes that at some point you get them. That's not a winning formula. We need a better answer.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about UFC 199 and talk about the huge announcement of the return of Brock Lesnar, UFC 200 in July. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. Of course, UFC 199 happened this weekend at the Forum in Los Angeles, California. History made as Michael Bisping defeated Luke Rockhold. Dominic Cruz asserted his dominance over Uriah Faber. It was just one of those nights. If you were a mixed martial arts fan, if you're a combat sports fan, if you were a sports fan in general, because they told some stories. They told the story of this aging Olympian, 45 years of age, Dan Henderson, a guy that's been around the block a time or two. He's not supposed to win this fight against this physical specimen, the former Olympic judoka in Hector Lombard, the American top team representative, who looked ridiculous. Cartoon. Imagine that's the guy standing across the cage from you, ready to punch you in the face. Dan Henderson weathered the storm. Even though he hurt Hector Lombard, Lombard managed to stay safe and hurt Dan Henderson, who was in jeopardy after being tossed onto the ground. Hendo survived round one, landed that little grimy elbow, and holy smokes, did he sealed the deal when the fight hit the ground.
Oh, man.
I was screaming.
Me too. I had five or six people in my house. Everyone was jumping up and screaming. It was crazy. I mean, that's you talked about it. By the time people are seeing this, it's been 4 or 5 days since all this and the news and the fights and everything. And it's a shame because there's so much in the world that we move on quickly. Mm-hmm. But you can go back and watch this fight and just kind of feel the specialness of the moment.
Yeah.
You know, imagine you're in your mid-40s and you're doing something way too long, way past. Everyone's saying you can't do it, and you see that monster over there.
2017 will mark the 20-year anniversary of Dan Henderson's inclusion in mixed martial arts. 20 years in MMA.
Think of that. And to have that moment like that, and just that brilliant veteran moment. There's open space here. I have a position of leverage. You holding my leg gives me some core leverage to go ahead and launch from this space to that spot. It's there. I can do it. I understand my balance. That's what 20 years gets you. That's what 20 years gets you. And there are some super athletes who can do stuff like that. Uriah Hall can figure out, just because of his control over his body, he can do that.
Uriah Faber as well. We've seen him
kicking guys, kneeing guys off the single years back. These are the reasons Uriah should be considered one of the greatest lighter weight fighters ever. But Henderson, that was beautiful. Henderson and Bisping, to see that like that, we love the combat, we love the martial arts itself, the technology of fighting, all of those things, but to see that kind of people overcoming and achieving and stuff, that's part of the beauty of all sports.
I think to get to see that in conjunction with seeing what the future is going to look like, seeing Max Holloway, and see, like you talk about the lack of confidence in Luke Rockhold.
Overconfidence.
Yeah, but when he got in there, he didn't seem to be as confident as he needed to be. That, you know, even though it's like, I'm going to kick this guy's ass with, like, two broken hands and a broken foot. That's just a reality. And then he got in there, and it's like, well, that's not real.
Yeah. Right. This is a fight. I have to do it. I have to make this happen. Yeah.
You know, so.
But Max Holloway, wow.
He just threw the roof. It felt like no matter what Lamas did, there was no way he was going to be able to compete with Max Holloway, especially when Holloway would back him up against the cage and go to work. I'm not stunned because you know how tough Lamas is, but I'm very surprised that he managed to weather that storm.
I saw a lot of tweets. Conor McGregor obviously has a lot of fans, and seeing Poirier and Max Holloway, people are like, oh, that makes his wins even better. I agree. But I also think those guys being pushed, having the pressure of fighting somebody everyone's talking about and all that kind of stuff, and not quite pulling it off, where do you go from that? You go back, you retool, and you'd be better than ever. And I think those experiences were the turning point for both of those guys.
Mm-hmm. You talk about Dustin Poirier, a sensational performance over, you know, Bobby Green, who... He's a name brand guy. We know he's had issues. I got to hang out with the guys from Head Rush, who at one point, we were watching the fights this weekend, and they had sponsored both guys. And it's like, yes, we love Dustin Poirier. He's a savage. This guy epitomizes the word scrapper. But they really feel for Bobby Green. They said because of he's a family man. He's gone through so much adversity in his life that you kind of want good things for him. So to see this happen to him, they said they really, really felt bad because he's genuine. A good person. So, I mean, that's the fight game. Sometimes you get knocked out and sometimes you knock somebody out.
You're going to celebrate Dan Henderson's the great things that happened to this great man, and you're going to feel bad for the guys who don't win.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking to Josh Gross, who will join us on the line. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Tragic news in the world of combat sports. Actually, just news in general. The great Muhammad Ali lost his life on Friday. Josh Gross joining us now. You wrote a book, Ali versus Inoki, The Forgotten Fight, that inspired mixed martial arts and launched sports entertainment. Were you surprised how few people knew about this fight or had seen this fight between Inoki and Muhammad Ali?
You know, actually, as I've gone along in the process, I probably spent the last year and a half really invested in this book, the last year especially, and it comes out June 21st, and I'm excited for people to read it. And I was surprised how few people, even people who were alive at the height of his career and watching all of his fights, either forgot about it or had no frame of reference for it. It really was stunning to me.
Now, do you think the reason why, because what I've learned in my 10 years being here at Fight Network is that there is a divide, that boxing fans tend to like boxing, they kind of shun pro wrestling, and they're not really MMA fans, so to speak. Pro wrestling fans seem to be MMA fans and boxing fans. MMA fans seem to be MMA fans and boxing fans and kind of closet pro wrestling fans. Is that one of the reasons why? Because there's not a whole lot of crossover from boxing to the other arts?
I think the main reason why it has been considered a farce and a dud and basically maligned and forgotten a lot of circles is that the boxing press hated it at the time. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand it. There was really no frame of reference for these kinds of fights in 1976. So even like people who tuned in just to watch Ali, they didn't know what they were seeing. They had no idea that he was actually being hurt in that fight. They didn't understand the rules. There was a lot of confusion around it. I mean, people didn't know if they were turning in for a pro wrestling match, a real fight, or what it was. But people tuned in, and people watched because Muhammad Ali participated, and he was making a show of it. I mean, the statements that he made leading up to the fight were incredible in terms of his perspective on grappler versus boxing history, and, you know, his drive to prove that he wasn't the best fighter in the world necessarily, but the best fighter in the world. You know, Ali had a lot of guts in this fight. I am surprised that it isn't a larger part of his legacy, and one of the things that I hope to accomplish in the book, and I think I do a decent job of it, is really sort of framing the paradigm from which to see this fight now, 40 years later, in a world where mixed fighting is as popular as any combat sport in the world, where it's definitely right at the same plane as boxing in terms of cultural relevance, perhaps even more these days, to revisit the fight and understand that Muhammad Ali, at the height of his fame, went and took on a grappler.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, that's an amazing thing. I could never imagine Floyd Mayweather doing anything like that, or any boxer of current day status doing that. And I think it's important because this match, and you read the subheadline of the book, I believe it really had a major influence over the structure of current-day MMA.
Agreed.
It was unquestionably important in terms of building mixed martial arts in Japan. And, you know, on the pro wrestling side, the pro wrestling people were all over this event. The McMahon family promoted it. They ran the closed-circuit business in the U.S. They used a lot of wrestling venues that night that had live wrestling to go along with the event on closed-circuit. I mean, you have all these connective tissues, and I learned so much. I thought I knew a lot, right, before I did this book. But I learned so much about the true history of what led to the rise of modern-day mixed martial arts. I think there's a lot of value in the book, and I hope people have a new perspective on this contest if they take the chance to read it.
I think it's just an incredible thing that you wrote this. And, you know, we always have you on because we have a very sort of adversarial relationship with some journalism. I think we see somehow we look at media different than traditional journalism. And I often sell it short. And it's something I have to keep reminding myself is wrong. But when I look at a book like this, and I look at the study that you did and the research, yeah, and how deeply you had to look in history and all of these things, it really is an incredible – we have you on, Josh, because you show us what good journalism is.
Well, I appreciate that. I try my best. You know, I somehow stumbled into this underground fight world in 1999, 2000. And there was no real journalism at the time. It was a collection of fans who essentially loved what they were watching and just wanted to disseminate their love and have people aware of it. And, you know, I had a natural inclination to do journalism, and I walked into this wide open space. It was the Wild West, and I was like, wow, I get this immediate access to these amazing fighters, and I can stand here, and I can see this, and I can touch this. And soon enough, I started just asking questions that people weren't asking. And, you know, I think there's a lot of value in that. I would love for more people to step into the space and, you know, do more journalism. I think it's definitely a big business now. It requires those sorts of things. And clearly we've seen that there's a negative tint towards true journalism in the sport. The powers that be sometimes don't like that. I do my best, and I try in the book. I mean, I certainly try and, you know, promote themes that I think are understated in the book. I try and shine light on a small, tiny chapter in this great man's life, Muhammad Ali, to say, you know what, on top of all the things that he's done, on top of his entire legacy, he was actually pretty great that he tried to take on this grappler, and he's got some legacy in the mixed martial arts world. I was kind of disappointed by the UFC's tribute to Ali. It was nice that they did something at UFC 199, but I think they missed the boat not connecting him to MMA more. So, you know, I try, Robin. I really appreciate that, and I'm always happy to discuss this stuff.
Josh, the last thing I want to ask you, you talk about the importance of this fight with Ali and Inoki and the scope of it, and I think you talk about it in the book that it generated a lot of money. Money that can't be found anywhere. What is your take? What do you think happened to the money that this fight generated?
Yeah, that's a good question. Bob Arum wouldn't talk to me. Bob Arum considers it one of the big farces of his career. Of course, he does not like mixed martial arts and mixed style fighting.
Of course not.
You know, the bottom line is that Ali was guaranteed, according to the contract, $3 million. He was supposed to get a total of six, which at the time was an astronomical fee for a fighter. And he got, I think, in the end, 1.8. It was the financials on this one were really screwy. You're talking about the pro wrestling business coming together with the boxing business for an international closed circuit event that really no one had any idea what the hell was going on. So it was quite a thing. And I do get into the financials quite a lot in the book. I look at the closed circuit in the book, and it was a fun thing to delve into and learn about in this moment in Ali's life. I had to wonder myself whether, writing a book about Muhammad Ali is no small thing, and I felt a lot of pressure doing that. And I hope people respond to it, enjoy it. So far, the reviews have been really good, and I'm excited for people to read it on the 21st of June.
The name of the book, Ali versus Inoki, The Forgotten Fight That Inspired Mixed Martial Arts and Launched Sports Entertainment. He is the author, Josh Gross. Thank you so much for your time. I really look forward to reading this book, and kudos to you, man, for just doing your thing and spreading the truth.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Final segment here. Man, what a show it's been thus far. Great stuff from Josh Gross.
Brilliant.
We got to look ahead to UFC 200. Huge news. Helwani gets the boot, but man, oh man, Brock Lesnar making the return to the UFC. This just tells you what type of individual he is. He's been in there. Alistair Overeem smashed this man in his body. Cain Velasquez did terrible things to this guy. For the amount of experience that he has to want to get back in there. Now, it's like, okay, can you somehow get the hippo?
Yeah.
Bring this guy out of retirement, and I'll face him.
Yeah, bring me a softball.
Yeah, bring me, again, we're not saying anything about Anthony Parrish, but
he's in his 40s.
You would understand why a fight like that would be made, because it's not necessarily the opponent.
It's not a top 10 guy.
It's Brock Lesnar. Yeah, Brock Lesnar's the star, just like Ronda Rousey was the star, Conor McGregor's the star.
In that case, we'd face a jiu-jitsu guy. We could out-wrestle him. He's not going to be dangerous on the feet. This would be a softer ball.
Exactly. Instead, the UFC says, we want you to fight Mark Hunt. Brock Lesnar says, I am in. Good on you, Brock Lesnar.
I can't even believe
Amazing.
I've been a fan of this behemoth, watching him fight from a martial arts perspective, like from a wrestling martial artist, weird experiment, size, power, wrestling, built from the ground up kind of by himself, brings in some coaches, his own beast. So that's fascinating to me. But to see him fight Mark Hunt, I would have thought, find him, Bigfoot Silva also.
Perfect.
Another great fighter.
Perfect idea.
But a guy over his time.
Little broken.
Some challenges with his hormones, all kinds of things. That would be. So one thought that I do have, I was sick for about 8 months. I had hypothyroiadism.
Yeah.
And
I was around you during those
days. Yeah, it was weird, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know something was wrong.
Yeah.
I just
It felt like something was off, said, but you just didn't know what that was.
I didn't
was.
Know what it was. And you wonder, maybe this is what it's like to be 40 now.
Yeah.
Or maybe I took damage from fighting. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. But something was wrong, but this could just be normal. And then you find out you have a thyroid disorder and you get treated for it. And when you get back to normal, only then do you realize how sick you were, how weak you were, how poorly you performed in everything in day-to-day life, how you dealt with challenges, even psychologically, depression because of illness. Brock Lesnar went through that with his whole internal organs.
Bananas.
He didn't know how sick he was when he went to fight. Now that he feels better again, he's fully healthy, he can look back and go, I can't believe I fought the best fighters in the world in such a compromised, ill state. Imagine what I'm going to do to these guys now. I think that's the experience he's having. He's realizing just that was a 4 or 5 out of 10 Brock Lesnar, and now he's a 9.5.
That is just an amazing idea. I think one of the reasons why, Brock Lesnar has his supporters and he has his detractors, because, I've been around MMA for a long time. Either you grew up as a professional wrestling fan and just made the natural progression over to mixed martial arts, or you've hated professional wrestling and you hear Brock Lesnar, it's like, oh, that fake fighter is going to get his butt kicked when he gets to the UFC. People forget this is a decorated martial arts champion.
This ain't CM Punk.
This isn't CM Punk. This is a guy that wrestled at the highest level and NCAA. I know people will say, well, the Olympics and whatnot, but the guy knows how to wrestle. He was a champion. And to think about his return to the UFC, you know he's going to be dedicated. However, you saw it may be an issue. That's it for us. We had a crazy show. Got to thank Josh Gross for his insight.
Thank you.
And, of course, rest in peace to the great Muhammad Ali. On behalf of Robin Black, our producer, Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdean. Thanks so much for tuning in to Five Rounds today. We'll see you all next week.